Semi-crazy, I think that's less than most. My delusions aren't quite up to snuff. I see the news, a rag soiled with lies. It only gets love when somebody's died. See the cars zip past the crosswalks. Watch you hurry, a wander to the sky. Boring job, one that's gonna kill ya. Turn on, tune in, drop out.
Welcome, one and all, to a memorial episode of Professor Metal's Irate Debate and Calamitous Commentary. We are the Philosophical Chain Gang, and unfortunately today we have to...
That's okay, it's okay, man. Hey, we have the unfortunate duty to inform you that Professor Metal is no longer with us. In our bereavement, we've really got only a few ideas of what to do, so we're gonna keep doing what he loved for as long as possible, and hope we don't run out of air down here in the think tank.
Yeah, so apparently he left us this recording, which we'll play for you. It's his last word, because he wanted you to hear it.
We, of course, haven't listened to this so that we can all share in the moment.
Yeah, we're all really broken up about this.
Welcome, one and all, to Professor Metal's Irate Debate and Calamitous Commentary with the Philosophical Chain Gang. Today's episode, Copy Goes Here. I'm your host, Professor Metal.
I'm Bruce.
I'm Sean.
And I'm River. And we really should have checked that first. I guess, what should we do for today's episode?
In remembrance of everything he meant to our lives, celebrity tragedies. Do celebrities ever really die?
Popular tragedy. Do celebrities ever really die?
Oh, that's better.
Okay. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Great.
So, popular tragedy. What do we mean when we say that? Certainly everybody loves a good gossip piece. A good train wreck, as it were. And for some reason, we really enjoy that about celebrities.
Or when it's a real tragedy, as opposed to in the literary sense, you know, celebrity deaths, of which we've seen quite a few lately. I don't want to say enjoy, but we wallow. We fully get our cathartic angst out over that.
Well, we may not all on a regular basis actively want to engage that kind of tragedy, but there's certainly some of us who choose to spend more time there than others. I mean, there's certainly a subculture of people who, for example, had a very difficult time getting over Princess Diana's death. And at least part of that was not about celebrating a wife. It was really about the details of a death.
Certainly. I mean, there's often a lot of speculation around a tragedy writ large, as it were. A tragedy on a grand scale, whether it be a death or a crisis of some sort. And I guess one of my questions here is, why do we even care? So certainly it's a tragedy, it's sad, it's unfortunate, but why do we care about people we don't even necessarily know, at least not on a personal level?
I think it's because our brain thinks we know them. For most of human evolution, we lived in small groups of about 100 to 200 people, and it seems that our brains automatically, without any conscious thought on our effort, instantly recognize about that many people. And I think when our brains feed things to us whole cloth like that, we tend to not question it. We see celebrity faces, and if they're in that list of the people we know, without having to actually process any extra mental effort to recognize them, they feel like our friends. And at an almost instinctual level, we respond to them as if they were personal friends or acquaintances.
Well, certainly for any social animal, it's important to have a certain kind of instant recognition in the friend or foe database of our brains. If I don't recognize someone, they may be a threat. So I need to be aware of whether this is someone I've interacted with before, and if possible, how that interaction went. If you and I, say, trade on a regular basis, I need to instantaneously have a better feeling about you than, say, the other guy who steals from me every time I see him.
I think celebrity culture, as it is well known, is kind of that over a large scale. Not just a person or a couple of people have this feeling of friendliness, but thousands or millions of people associate a friendly face to these individuals. Even if they don't necessarily know them, they've been audience to what they do in some sense, even if what they do is mostly an act, stage presence of some sort.
So the existence and development of mass media makes it possible for it to be hugely imbalanced, with absolutely no limits between how many other people may recognize this person and how many people that person recognizes. And that imbalance shows up in interesting ways. Like people say, well, I met this famous person and they didn't have time for me and kind of brushed me off, so I'm really mad at them. You're really mad at them because they sort of brushed you off because you expected them to treat you like a friend or like a close acquaintance to make some time for you. It doesn't cross your mind that to them you're a complete stranger. They don't see you the same way that you see them. A lot of celebrities really have to go out of the way to make sure they run make time for everybody who wants time from them. But we get really, really mad at them when they treat us as what we rightfully are, a stranger. So that imbalance creates sort of an interesting situation where gossiping about them becomes news, solely because so many people are interested in it. Now, in daily lives, you may only care about gossip about, you know, three or four people, a few people that you know. But to hear the sorts of details that if it was happening to a friend of yours, you'd be like, oh, really? Is that happening? Becomes something that could be printed up in a magazine and sold to millions of people. To pull that towards tragedy a little bit, since we're working towards, in the literary sense of tragedy, there is the heroic fall from their own hubris. And I think we impose that on celebrities fairly often. We'll like a celebrity right up to a certain point that we decide we've had enough of them, and then we'll decide they're horrible and bad and we hate them and they become a villain. Even though their life might be just proceeding along without any recognizable difference. Or it might only change because the public has turned on them.
Well, I think we've discussed before the idea that to the extent that some people benefit from a system like this, in which some are lauded more than others just for perhaps the lucky accident of where or when they were born or a particular talent that they have of some sort, those people should be held to a higher standard because they have benefited more from the same system that everyone else exists within. Maybe it's not unfair for us to expect the right to watch with a certain poetic justice when somebody's own vices end up destroying the beautiful thing that they have handed to them. Certain schadenfreude as regards celebrities, joy in watching the suffering of someone who maybe you don't feel like deserves to be given so much in the world. It's not entirely unreasonable.
That's fair, but I mean, there is also a flip side to that where a celebrity is so beloved where they have this fall, whether it be personal tragedy or some form of hubris that is being accounted for or something, and instead of kind of shunning them, their fans or the public at large embraces them. They come to their side, as it were. They defend them. The biggest example of this is when a celebrity unfortunately passes. There is this mourning period for somebody that the public at large doesn't necessarily know, but at the same time feels very intimately connected with them through art of some variety, either performance or music or paintings. There are certainly, I mean, different forms of art, but there are plenty of people who feel the loss of someone they don't even know because of this connection that they have, because they feel connected to their work, even if they are not necessarily connected to their person.
And in this sense, then, we're talking about tragedy, not in the literary form, but as a real tragedy, the person actually died.
Well, let's pull this back a little bit then, because I think that we are hitting a disconnect between what we were talking about earlier and what we're talking about now. The notion of a celebrity that we were talking about initially in terms of someone you recognize as if they were a member of your community, even if they're not, is equally true for, say, a local celebrity. say, the local weatherman or the high school football quarterback or someone like that who you may know from the actual world around you, but who may be has an inflated status within your social sphere because of that kind of rank. That, however, seems to be disjointed with this notion of the mourning period, almost as attributed to a king or great leader, that is also transferred onto celebrity deaths. So where is the connection that moves us along from treating them as a member of our community, even if they're not, to treating them as an elevated member of a community?
I think to some extent there is a don't know what you got till it's gone effect. Maybe there's some celebrities who fall in the category of someone thinks, well, I'd like to listen to more of their music when I have time to, or may study more about them, but they're still out there. And then they die, and sometimes they realize, I'm not sufficiently one of the cognoscenti in terms of their art, so I'm going to really sort of overblow it and really get into them now.
But shouldn't that be the opposite reaction? I mean, at that point, you know exactly how much they will have ever produced.
Well, I mean, also, part of it would be media saturation. When we talk about, like, someone of sufficiently large popularity or infamy, there were definitely celebrities that were not known for necessarily being good guys. Bonnie and Clyde, John Dillinger.
Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen, certainly. Like, super popular, not exactly a good person, but there is, especially in this day and age where we have the internet and we have the 24-hour news cycle, it becomes less a, oh, did you hear what happened to this person? And becomes a exposés everywhere, everybody has an opinion on it, and your sphere kind of gets saturated with all of this news and information and speculation about what happened.
I think a great example of the oversaturation of media around somebody's passing is probably really well exampled by Michael Jackson's death. Here was a situation where someone passed away under a, shall we say, less than pleasant circumstance, and because of the celebrity of that person, every news story was about Michael Jackson's death for the next several weeks/months, depending on how closely you were watching the right kinds of news sources. And more so than that, it was also what was being talked about everywhere, not just in the media directly, but people were talking about it. People were mourning, people were going through a full experience of something that looked a lot like the death of Caesar in Rome.
Oh, certainly. And I mean, even the death of Caesar, although a smaller scale overall, was in a way a similar occurrence, only with a politician and beloved figure, if we're talking about one of the more favorable Roman emperors. You feel that that person represented you in some way. If it's a politician, they represented you in a political fashion, or they represented you as an aspect of your voice, I guess.
Are you suggesting that the death of a celebrity is in some sense a metaphor for our own deaths? Like, do they represent us in dying as well?
I guess in a way, in that as people tend to take certain parts of external stimulus and make them part of our identity, we allow, whether knowingly or not, the world around us to shape us. It shapes our perception, it shapes the lens with which we view things, and what is more upfront and there in your face than popular media? What are you experiencing more in this day and age, other than personal human interaction, of course, than popular media? There's a great quote I heard, and I unfortunately can't tell you who said it, but the reason we mourn the deaths of celebrities is not because we knew them, but because they helped us know ourselves.
I think the use of Caesar is actually fairly spot on, in that Rome literally declared him a god once he had died. There is something to, once you're no longer a person, you can become a mythological figure. because you're no longer around to disappoint us or to argue with our mythologization of you. And celebrities in popular cultures, I think they do pass into myth. I mean, Marilyn Monroe, James Dean, Elvis.
Actually, there is a term for what we're talking about, although it's not as commonly used in celebrity culture and more in political or national culture. And that is the cult of personality. When somebody is elevated above being just a person to being a figure, a representation of an idea or set of ideas that brings people into this idea. That's how they are introduced to it. Obviously, this could be a good or a bad thing. A lot of dictators have been said to have a cult of personality, but so have a lot of great leaders. In this sort of ascension from person to figurehead, we tend to, especially if we're, as it were, in the fold, in this person's cult of personality, we tend to forgive or overlook their faults and exemplify them, make them a paragon of what they represented.
And to some extent, when a famous person dies, they become timeless in a certain sense. For example, the Michael Jackson who was alive was the current Michael Jackson, who looked as he did, who was having some embarrassing stories from time to time. He was that specific guy in the moment of his life. But once he died, he became the Michael Jackson of his whole life. The Motown era, the Thriller era, the moonwalk. You can sort of pick from across his life sort of an amalgam composite picture that you put together of him. And when you do that, you can sort of gloss over some of the things that you might like not to highlight so much.
So that's a good point. Someone brought up Charlie Sheen earlier, and I think that this raises an interesting question. Will a figure like Charlie Sheen, who is almost at this point better remembered for the negative culture around him than any positives he might have contributed, be forgiven, or will they become a sort of, shall we say, devil figure?
I think it's a matter of perspective. Specifically, when we talk about the cult of personality, a great example would be Lenin, where he had his failings. He had some ideas that weren't so popular, but after his death, he wasn't a man who helped lead the Russian people towards what he believed it was a communist ideal. He was lauded as a hero and founder of the communist ideal and the Soviet Union. To those in the Soviet Union, in the Western world, as it became known, he was more of a devil figure. He was more of a bad guy because the Western world, America, and the NATO countries, as they would become, were, especially during the first and second Red Scares and into McCarthyism, during the second Red Scare, he was very much made a devil figure. He was the bad guy. He was the secret wielding shadowy figure that threatened to take away Americans' way of life and prosperity. Whereas at the same time, in a different place, in a different perspective, he was lauded as one of the great founders.
I have a hard time seeing it, but I like the idea that Lenin sheds light on Charlie Sheen's situation somehow. I think it can go one of two ways. If he comes back from the brink, sort of revitalizes his career, manages to keep his health going, he's Robert Downey Jr. If he ends up driving himself to death, then he's Amy Winehouse. Both of them have thought well.
And again, this comes down to a matter of perspective, but I wouldn't consider, personally, Amy Winehouse in such a negative light. Yes, she died rather tragically from an overdose and was known for her problems with drugs and alcohol in the past, but again, she was still this very well-loved figure for her music. She was considered a fantastic artist who was on the rebound very much at the time of her death. She had a new producer and had very much come back before, unfortunately, dying. Actually, I think a better example for the person, the celebrity, who does not such the great thing and is still lauded would be Kurt Cobain. He was known for having, before his death, a very severe problem with heroin and, unfortunately killed himself in 1992, but he is still remembered very fondly for the music that he produced and everything that he did. And I think he leaves a bigger question when analyzing this sort of stuff than maybe Charlie Sheen or Amy Winehouse.
I think Kurt Cobain's going to end up having to be in a different category altogether when we talk about this. The sense that someone is forgiven for or reviled continually for their sins after passing away and becoming the ideal rather than the person only applies if that person was somewhat out of sync with the thing that is afflicting them. Either they were really sort of a person with some problems who is now being completely absolved of those problems, or they were someone who had a lot of good things going on who's being dogged even after their death by them. Kurt Cobain was unapologetically a heroin addict. He embraced that part of his existence in a way that was very off-putting to a lot of people, but certainly does not leave him out of sync with the public perception of him in that way, or his death under those terrible circumstances.
I think he thought ill of himself for it towards the end quite a bit.
The fact that we as a public were given access to the conditions approaching his death definitely changed the context a great deal, especially with the release of his suicide note and the fact that, you know, he very much battled with depression, which is an affliction that still affects many, both regular people and celebrities. Of course, very recently, the death of Robin Williams really brought that back to the forefront. Having to deal with depression and mental illness, amongst other things, is a very tricky thing, I think, when you're a celebrity and when you're projecting this public image, because you want to appear, or your people, as it were, your producers, your assistants, your managers, want you to appear as a certain image, and mental illness as a whole tends to really throw a monkey wrench into that, because it doesn't fit with what the public views as normal.
I actually think it's really good that we're talking about Robin Williams and the link to depression around his unfortunate passing, because that brings up another element of what happens when a celebrity dies, which is that suddenly everyone cares about a very specific cause. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm not going to dog on people for being reminded about something terrible like the battle against mental illness that our society deals with on a regular basis. But we all seem to lose focus until all of a sudden something like this goes on. So why do we feel the need to become very active in a particular cause like that when a celebrity passes away, when literally thousands of people pass away from the same thing every year?
I think this goes back to the, we think of celebrities in the same way we think of our friends. If someone's friend commits suicide, that person's friends and family will become very interested in what caused them to commit suicide, or what killed them, or what happened to them. But that's a very small group of people. When it happens to a celebrity, all of the people whose brain registered them as friend are going to behave in the same way. I really care about this thing that killed this person who I know so well, or I feel I know so well, even though I don't. So it's really just the same thing.
I'm going to go a little counterculture in this, and I'm going to flat out say that part of the reason popular media doesn't talk about the things that cause tragedies until they are right there in your face, especially around someone rather famous's death, is they don't like to talk about it. They'd rather be interested in the relatively safe tragedy. They don't want people to necessarily think about that. They don't want people to think about the real tragedy. They want to keep them entertained, and that is not, to them, entertainment.
I'm going to disagree with you on that. Specifically, in our era of news as entertainment, we look constantly at the worst thing that we can find to point out to people. We don't want to show them the safe thing. We want to show them the dangerous thing, the thing they should be afraid of, because that's what brings viewers back. And in a world where news media has to attract viewers the same way scripted media and the like do, anything that elicits an emotional reaction from the audience will draw viewers in. So I don't think that necessarily the media is not interested in talking about these things because they want it to be safe and they don't want to have to talk about that. I think it's the opposite. I think we're the ones who don't want to talk about it. I think they know that this will turn people off from watching a show like that because we don't want to have the conversation, because unless it is removed from us by the barrier of this celebrity culture, it is too emotionally raw for that conversation to happen on a TV show. As in the case of Robin Williams, somebody who has battled a long time with depression, finds themselves out of options, and passes away like that, we are granted a window into a very painful event, but with the removed distance of a viewer from outside the circumstance. And I believe that that makes it okay in a way that it's not when it is a real personal tragedy. I think it makes it okay for there to be a news broadcast about it, for there to be a national conversation, for there to be a community of strangers talking about something so painful. And I think that we can't blame other sources for not showing us the thing we don't want to see in the first place.
There is a such thing as concern fatigue. Most of us have a hard time managing to really care about these issues all the time and function. When an event happens for a short time, I think we can spike up and actually show a lot of caring at the same time. There's also a certain amount of, you know, for people who do care about it all the time, there's a certain amount of opportunism that's involved of saying, see, this is what we've been talking about. Let's get the social media out right now. And for being opportunistic, you can't really blame them or say that's bad because they're using this to highlight something good. But I also think there's a certain sense of guilt in all of us. Because when a celebrity is going off the rails and doing a lot of drugs and sort of walking the line out there, we are doing the Schadenfreude thing. We are saying, ha ha, Charlie Sheen's so crazy. Look what happened to this. Or, oh my God, this person clearly let themselves go. They're crazy on drugs. And we buy those from tabloid magazines. And then they die. And we're like, oh, we shouldn't have felt that way. Now we feel bad. So now we really care extra.
Well, I think that brings us back, actually, to another interesting reversal, which is to move away from the very real tragedy and back to the poetic tragedy, the literary tragedy. Gossip rags exist on paparazzi photos. Taking a picture of a celebrity at the worst possible moment, getting the picture of somebody going off the deep end, is not only the goal, but is the actual job description of an entire class of, I'm using big air quotes, journalists. If we did not celebrate those tragedies in some sense, why would we be so drawn to continuing to support that kind of behavior when most people, if they're asked face-to-face, one-on-one, will say, no, of course not, that's completely unethical and I can't stand that people treat them like that.
And yet there's real economic demand for these images, enough to support its own industry.
Is it a guilty pleasure?
I think in some ways, yes. I think it's very much a twofold, I'm going to say proposition, for lack of a better term. On one hand, real life is in some ways preferable to the fiction, and I think that writes itself well to personal tragedy of people. You have some, no matter how distant, connection to, that's part of Schadenfreude, is the secret enjoyment, even if it seems morally reprehensible in some fashion, that you're enjoying this bad thing that's happening. I think the other half of that is exceptionalism. I may find it morally reprehensible, but because I speak out against it, or because I disapprove of it, I can still consume it because I'm the exception, because I am aware of how bad it is. And therefore, I am exempting myself from responsibility for driving demand.
And yet every single one of them is saying the same thing. I think especially in America, blame cells, pointing the finger at sin cells. The only way I can see that we aren't being completely two-faced about this, because while they're alive, we enjoy their pain and their suffering and the schadenfreude and the gossip about what terrible thing is happening to them, and then we're dead, we suddenly revere them and we rend our garments and we feel so awful for how we, well actually not we, but everyone else around me has been treating them. The only way I can see that this isn't being entirely hypocritical is if we're actually in some sense condemning them for still being alive. We want them to transform over into when we can deify them.
I think that's an interesting idea, but I think part of the counterpoint to that is we don't necessarily, as a culture, when I say we, I do mean us as a culture, an American culture, as a whole, don't necessarily just celebrate the tragedy. We also celebrate the good stuff. If there's a celebrity wedding, we want to see pictures of it. Somebody just had a kid or somebody just adopted a kid. What do they look like? You know, where are they from? Who's the parent? There is a lot more to gossip in celebrity culture than just the tragedy. Actually, a great real-life example of this is the wedding of Princess Diana in the early 90s. It was being celebrated not just in Britain, because it was a royal wedding, but here in America, too, because of a lot of the stuff surrounding the marriage of Diana and some of the controversies it caused in the royal family. And then, of course, very shortly after that, there is the tragedy of her death. In celebrity gossip, we do enjoy the tragedy. We do enjoy the juicy bits, the juicy details of somebody's falling over. But we do also, in some ways, laud the good things that happen to them, too.
True, it's not just the fallen. It's also those who do well. There's also redemption stories.
So I think maybe we've hit on something more important than it's otherwise appearing, and that's the notion of exceptionalism. As a matter of fact, I would say that the notion of exceptionalism is the thread that runs through all of this and binds the whole problem and opportunity together. The notion that celebrities are like people you know, but not really people you know, is really a kind of exceptionalism. It's the belief that somehow, even though I'm just like all those other fans, I'm somehow the special one, the one that they're going to pay attention to, the one who could really be best friends with whoever. The notion that celebrities are somehow a different class of people prone to problems or solutions not available to us, the common folk, is a kind of exceptionalism about other people. The definition of an exceptional class of people, people who are not otherwise plagued by the concepts that we otherwise hold true of the normals. The notion of setting aside a group of people and making them into something else, whether that group is ourselves set aside from the rest of the pack, or those we set aside from the rest of society, is entirely inherent in the notion of elevating a celebrity into an idea figure. All of these things run back to the notion that we can separate away some portion of humanity and make something different of them. And I think that might be the fundamental flaw underlying the entirety of celebrity culture.
Hey, look, we've got a caller.
All right. Line one, you're on the air.
You complete idiots.
Professor
Metal?
You're alive?
I'm so happy.
This is so great.
Oh, damn.
Where are you calling from, Professor?
I decided to take a vacation to the beach in Iowa.
But there aren't any beaches in Iowa.
There are now.
Well, we'd like to apologize to any listeners from Des Moines.
If there is a Des Moines left.
You can say that.
How did you know we thought you were dead, though? I haven't seen any cameras.
That's because I deconstructed them before I left.
Is there anything you'd like to talk about, Professor, or is the show over?
Well, that depends. Have you reminded them to subscribe and review on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, send us their questions, and if they like what we're doing, support us on Patreon?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
That totally happened.
I guess join us next time?
No. next to the microphone.
But Professor, there's a wire between the two.
I said put the telephone next to the microphone.
Okay.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Join us next time after I try to get my deposit back on Iowa. I've been your host, Professor Metal.
I'm Bruce.
I'm Sean.
And I'm River.
So, Professor, I suppose I should probably be disposed of, huh?
Yes. Yes, you should.
Shall we just shove him in the garbage chute?
No, that incinerator's only on Tuesdays.
Feed him to the spiders from Mars?
Wait, are the spiders out of kibble?
Not as far as I know.
As a side note, we're running low.
I could climb into the Qualia energy dislocator.
Yes, Bruce. QED.
I'd feel as if I've got a lot of Qualia.
Security, slavery, it's better than the dark. Shade in the woods, more awful by far. Living children from mortal pursuits, learning rules, who cares if it's real?